Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody, this is James from the Clean Comedy Podcast, and I just want to shout out to you real quick to let you know that we're coming up on our 300th episode. 300, that's right, it's coming up, and there's going to be some big changes. You guys have requested a lot of stuff from me, and I'm going to give it to you. The logo over here, if you're watching the podcast on YouTube, is going to change. It will also change in your iTunes and all those things. You'll see a new logo coming up. Look for that. That'll change soon. You'll see it in the 300th episode. The new logo will be the background. The new logo, you'll see it everywhere, and everything will change on that day. We're also going to launch a Patreon. Lots of you have been asking for it. We're going to do a lot of stuff on Patreon. We're going to do get-togethers on there. We're going to do joke writing on there. We're going to do all the cool stuff that you guys want to do to make your comedy better. That's what I'm here for. So Patreon, it's going to be coming. So get excited. Episode 300, all that stuff's going to drop. You're also going to get a behind the scenes at what I've done since I started comedy, the amount of money I've made, the shows that I've done, the places I've been, the writing, everything. Everything that I've done. To get questions that you guys have, send them in. Email me for questions because we're going to do a Q&A on the 300th episode. Email cleancomedypodcast@gmail.com. See ya. Hey, everybody, it's James. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. And today I have someone who was a big part of my comedy journey starting out. They don't even know that they were a big part of that journey. But one of their tweets, I wrote a tweet and they replied to it when I was getting started in comedy. I was just learning to write topical jokes, political jokes. There's a site called Comedy Wire that I used to write jokes on. They also write jokes on it. But they are probably one of the smartest comedians there is. Like, they might say they're not a comedian, but I promise you that he is a comedian. He worked on Late Night with David Letterman, Jay Leno. He wrote for a bunch of TV shows. So, and just a comedic genius. Also, probably a real genius, as I know he has, I think it's a degree in engineering and also an MBA. So we have similar backgrounds there. I have an MBA and I also have degrees in history. So, probably two peas in a pod. He's going to be smarter because historians aren't that smart. But please welcome the very funny, the very smart, the very talented Mr. Joe Toplin. Joe?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. You were
generous,
like, what a
introduction. Wow.
No problem. You're like one of my dream guests, like, honestly.
Oh, so, well, I'm very flattered. Thank you.
Yeah, well, your book changed a lot of how I write, especially, and it actually, believe it or not, got me a few writing gigs to write for topical podcast and some other topical shows that I was writing news jokes from, all because I read your book and implemented those things.
That's great to hear. That's amazing. So you just submitted a packet, you wrote topical stuff and sent it in?
I was just writing jokes here and topical stuff, because I always mention, like, I love, you know, SNL's Weekend Update. I love those kind of things. I love monologues on shows. I've been to that, done the NBC tour twice and done that. So it's like one of my favorite things to do. I was like, yeah, I had read this book, you know, Comedy Writing for Late Night TV by Joe Toplin. And I recommend that book to everybody too. And people are like, well, I really want to write more of I don't really want to do stand-up, but I want to write comedy and I want to write, you know, late night stuff. And I was like, oh, you should totally read this book. It's like one of the best books ever.
Well, so, thank you.
Wow. So you, by buying your book, I've actually made more money. I don't know how that's possible.
that's great to hear. The whole idea of writing the book was to just kind of demystify the comedy writing process or the joke writing process as much as I could based on what I picked up in late night.
So I know that you have your bio and your stuff in there, but just for people who don't know you, just kind of give them a rundown of who you are and how you got started in the comedy writing world.
I worked hard in school, got into Harvard, worked hard, got on the Lampoon, and that's the first time that I really put my mind to writing comedy as something that you do as opposed to just throwing off jokes in conversation. And it took me a while after that to get into writing comedy professionally, because nowadays the Lampoon is recognized as being a place that shows and people who want to hire comedy writers will go to kind of get ideas and recruit writers. But at the time, it wasn't really as well established a career path. And so after I figured, I went to business school, as you mentioned, and got an MBA, worked in business for a couple of years, and then had an opportunity to submit some material to Late Night with David Letterman in the very early days of the show. I happened to know the head writer from the Lampoon, and he knew that the show was going to need writers, and he invited some people that he knew that he thought would be interested and good for that kind of writing to submit some packets. And so I did, and that was my start in professional comedy writing. I was writing for Late Night with David Letterman. I wrote for Dave for 6 years, then moved out to California. Was out there 6 years working on a couple of sitcoms, a few sitcoms, In Living Color. So I wrote sketch comedy too. And eventually got back in the Late Night. I was hired to be the co-head writer of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And did that for 2 years and then decided that I missed the East Coast and went back to the New York area and worked for Dave Letterman again on Late Show with David Letterman for another 6 years.
Wow. And you also wrote one of my favorite coming up sitcoms when I was a kid, Hanging with Mr. Cooper. I used to love that show. So I know you worked on that too.
I did, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, and shows that a couple of shows that lasted, I believe, like three episodes, five episodes. I've worked on shows that have been on the air for years and also ones that just came and went. And I also worked on Monk. I got the chance to write a 1 hour comedy mystery show, which was a ton of fun. And it was fun to do that because I enjoy comedy, but I also always have enjoyed mystery writing and clues. And
That's hard for me because like one of my favorite shows right now is Only Murders in the Building. If you've watched that.
I have not seen it, but I've heard great things about it.
It's great. It's a comedy and a mystery, but I am not good with mysteries. And I'm currently writing a Simpsons spec script called Only Murdiddly Urdlers in the Building. So if you remember the famous line that Flanders says in his backyard when he kills the plant and they thought he killed his wife, I'm a Murdiddly Urdler. So I thought, I would make something similar to that. But I'm having a hard time with the mystery portion of it. So I'm kind of making it a little more silly and less mystery, but more Simpsons. And a lot of Lampoon people have come and worked on The Simpsons as well. That's a big place to recruit as well.
That's true. Yep.
So it shows that there's a lot of genius there. I wish I would have known about, not that I could have got into Harvard, I'm not saying that at all, but I wish I would have known more about the Lampoon growing up so that I could have pursued that as a way to get in, because I own every issue of the Harvard or of National Lampoon digital, the digital version, every single issue. I have them digitally on my computer and I read through them every now and then and find funny stuff in there because it's so good, you know, and I listen to the National Lampoon Radio Hour a bunch of times. Like I'm very familiar with it and the Harvard Lampoon where that started. But man, I really wish I would have thought about that. So if anybody's getting ready to go to college or leave high school and wants to do it, if you have the grades, apply to Harvard just for that even one reason. Like even if you just want to take, you know, art history or whatever, basket weaving, whatever they offer, that's the easiest classes to pass. Well, if you get into the Harvard Lampoon, man, that's a big deal.
That's great advice. Yeah. I have known a few people who have wanted to go to Harvard just for the Lampoon, even when I was starting out and applying. And yeah, I think that might work. So it might give them an excuse to kind of balance their class in a little different way and get some funny people in.
Now, how long were you on the Lampoon? Like, how long is that? Just the 4 years that you're in college? And I know there's kind of like initiations and like, oh, it's hard to get in. It's competitive to get in, right?
Yeah, there's a competition. I think when I was competing, it was 8 consecutive weeks, and every week you had to write a comedy piece of some kind. You take it into the building, you put it on the floor of this room where everybody puts their submissions, and then the members come in when they have the time, and they read the submissions, they write notes on them and comments. And it's a lot of work. And there's also a business board, and so you can get on through that side also and sell ads and contribute that way too.
That's so cool. And like, what kind of pieces were they looking for when you started? Like, what kind of stuff were you writing? Were you writing like long form content or short form content or just little blurbs? Or now I guess what would be considered memes, right? Where it's like a cartoon with like something funny on it or something like that. Like, what kind of stuff did you have to submit, or did people submit for that?
People, there was no guidance at all. It was just submit what you think would be good for the Lampoon, that you enjoy doing and that you're good at, which kind of applies to when you're submitting to any show. You say, all right, what does the show, what sort of comedy do they do? What comedy do you want to do? And what comedy are you good at writing? And then you try to find the intersection of that Venn diagram and write that material, because you can write stuff that you can anticipate that the show is going to like, but you really hate writing it and you don't get any satisfaction from it. And if that's what they hire you to write, then you're just going to hate writing the show and it'll be fun. So yeah, I think most people did what I did, which is you read the Lampoon, you see what pieces they're publishing, and you say, well, I wonder if there's these are okay. I wonder if I could do better, put my own spin on the Lampoon voice and write pieces in that vein. One piece that I wrote that a submission was, and it's pretty hacky and stale when I think about it now, but it was, remember the old Reader's Digest?
Yes.
It was a magazine, and the front of it would have all the articles. So this was, my submission was the cover of a Reader's Digest, which I mocked up, and it was all these kind of funny names of articles. And I don't know whether I should say this. It's in pretty bad taste. But one joke I would never do this nowadays. Okay,
that was like 1970 or something, wasn't it? It was something like
yeah, but okay. the title was The Nurse Who Wouldn't Die. And it was like an inspiration, and it was written by Richard Speck, who was like who had killed like half a dozen student nurses. He was like a notorious serial killer.
Oh jeez.
So yeah, really, really bad taste, making a joke out of a grisly multiple homicide.
Well, dark humor is some people's bread and butter. You know, you think of like Anthony Jeselnik, Daniel Tosh. There's a lot of people who use dark humor to make jokes, and that's not everybody's forte, but comedy is subjective. So, you know, I would still laugh at that. I would look at that today and still laugh, because I grew up like on Mad Magazine and those things, and they would have a bunch of stuff similar to those kind of things, not as dark, but you know, a little bit on that edge, and that's humor. There's everybody finds something that they like or they don't like. You know, some people think clean comedy is hack. Some people think that, you know, alternative comedy is terrible. Some people think that, you know, mainstream comedy, they're not, it's too mainstream, and it's, you know, so it's too much now, you know, and they go to alt comedy. So it just depends on everyone's flavor, but that's the same thing as like movies and TV shows. So there's
yeah, not a thing there. I think, with my MBA hat on, the way I think of it is, if you just think of your target audience, you know, yeah, what do they want to hear? What do they expect? And then write to that. And if your target audience is an audience that really likes dark humor and humor about death and murder, and, well, especially if you're getting paid to tell jokes to that crowd, then those are the jokes you write. And if they get a laugh, then Those are good jokes by my definition.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that's what comedy is. It's going to always be subjective, which is why also even with late night host, each of them does a different monologue, right? When you submit a packet, you're writing to the voice of the late night host. So the way Stephen Colbert is going to do a monologue compared to Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or Seth Meyers is going to be very different than each other. You're going to see them all being different, and they're going to be different than what, you know, the way it used to be for Jay Leno or David Letterman, you know, those kind of things. How do you capture that voice? Cause you wrote for both Leno and David Letterman, who had two different kinds of tones and styles. How did you learn to write those voices? Did you have to watch a lot? Like, how'd that work?
Yeah, that's basically it. You just watch a lot of comedy, watch the hosts. I actually was also head writer for Caroline Ray, who, obviously a female, comedian, had her own show, her own comedy talk show. And as head writer, I had to write for her voice. And her audience was not the late night audience. It was a daytime audience. It was on I think 10 in the morning. So the way I did that was I just listened to her, watched her stand up, figured out the kinds of jokes she liked and her attitudes and reflected that in what I wrote.
That's awesome. Now, if you had to start over again, if you say you got to start over, you got to go back in time, you know what you know now, and you had to give young Joe Toplin the advice to get into the comedy world faster, right, without going through all the other stuff, what big piece of advice or what single piece of advice would you give yourself?
I tend to, because I spent so many years in school, I my first inclination is to read as much as you can about what you're interested in. And back when I was starting, and this is going to sound like plugging my book, and it is kind of, but when I was starting to be interested in show business and writing, there weren't really any books about how to do that. I remember there were a couple of books, they were very slim, and I was walking through Grand Central Station. I had a corporate job, and I saw them on the rack and was like, how to write for movies, how to write for television. And I bought them both, and I said, wow, somebody's actually writing about how to do that. And they weren't very good, but they were all that was there. And now there are lots of books about how to write sitcoms and features and 1 hour. And now there's my book, if you're interested in short form comedy, sketch writing and jokes and desk pieces and all the sorts of comedy they do on the late night shows. So my first piece of advice is like, read as much as you can about the kind of writing you're interested in doing, and then do it. Practice writing and get feedback on it. If you have friends who have similar interests, they're interested in the same sort of writing, get together with them and swap jokes, swap your material. You can give comments to each other about, give notes on your jokes, and it costs nothing. And so without even sending a submission out into the world, without even putting it on Twitter, you can just refine the quality, you can improve the quality of your writing. And it's kind of risk-free because you can do it while you're doing something else, and then get as good as you can. And then you can think about putting a packet together, a submission packet, if you're interested in late night, or you can write a spec sitcom or a spec 1 hour. And then the key is to get it into the right hands, get it into the hands of somebody who can hire you to do something, who knows somebody who knows somebody on a show that is looking for writers.
Yeah. I mean, and that's true. Now, you mentioned Twitter. Do you think Twitter is a great tool for comedians now who can put jokes out in the universe and get almost instantaneous feedback? Or do you think that that's a bad thing? I've had it. I've seen both sides of it, where someone put a joke out and it did great, and the other one where they got terrible feedback almost to the point where they quit, you know, social media or whatever and stuff too. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think Twitter is great for comedians, for comedy writers. I still post a topical joke pretty much every day on Twitter. And it's to just keep my comedy writing muscles limber as possible. And it's also a good way to establish a public sampling of your writing. If somebody says, oh, do you write jokes? Yes, I do. Can I see what you've written? Sure. At Joe Tomlin on Twitter, you can read 2,000 jokes that I've been writing for years. And they say, oh, okay. And another advantage of doing that is you can kind of work at your own pace. You can spend as much time as you want on your joke, post it online, and it's always there. It's always accessible. And it can be a writing sample. You can get feedback on your joke. And if people really hate it, that can be really good feedback.
Yeah.
You can say, wow, maybe the joke did stink, and how could I make it better? And so that's kind of, I think that's valuable advice a lot of times, is the advice that where somebody is honest enough to say, you know, this really isn't close to being professional quality, broadcast quality. If you're lucky, they'll go on to say, oh, and here's why, because nobody knows who Richard Speck is.
Right.
He was a serial killer back in, when you were. I guess criticism can be really valuable, even coming through Twitter.
Well, that's why I like Comedy Wire. I know you post some stuff up on Comedy Wire every now and then too.
I used to. Yeah, I'm not doing.
Oh, you don't anymore. You don't do it anymore? Oh, okay.
No,
I thought. Not for a while. Oh man, yeah. But I mean, I used to post stuff on Comedy Wire, and it was great to see, you know, people like, or you know, whatever, and see your stuff move up or get, you know, moved. I had a lot of jokes that after reading your book, I really like worked hard on jokes, and they were moving up on the top there. I'm like, okay, I have a skill here. I'm refining it. I need to keep doing it, and it'll get better and better. And I have been getting better and better with it. Thank you know. Honestly, a lot of it thanks to you. The other person, I don't know if you know Jerry Corley, but he also teaches a late night class. He did the same thing. So between both of you, I have to say I've been mentored by the best comedy writers in late night comedy before. So there you go. I'm proud to say that.
All right. Well, thank you for your kind words. Now, as a somebody who does stand up, how do you refine a joke? How do you fine tune it? How close is it to exactly where you want it to be before you first go on stage and tell it to a crowd?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Or just, does it depend on the comic?
Well, for me personally, I like to talk out my jokes. I don't write out jokes when it comes to stand-up, because saying something is different than reading something, you know. So if I write a joke, it may be correct grammatically, but when you say it, it sounds weird in your ear. You just go, that's not how people talk, right? So
right.
I talk on my jokes. Usually I record them. I have an app called otter.ai. So it records it, and it also does a transcription. I take the transcription and then I cut out the fat on it, and then I keep talking it out. And I have a group that I work with once a week that we run jokes past each other, and they give us notes and stuff. Robert G. Lee, who is a comedian who does comedy all over America and also does warm-up comedy for sitcoms, he runs that group. And so we all give feedback to each other. Then I take that joke once it's kind of worked out there and whatever notes they gave me, and then I go on stage and try it, see how it goes. And then I listen to that afterwards and see, okay, this line didn't go how I wanted, or maybe I need to rephrase that and work it out. And then it just takes, you know, a few times on stage to kind of get it finessed. I recently had a joke that I wrote about buying a bidet, getting a bidet. And right, it's funny because that word is funny already. But I went and on tour with Darren Carter, and in 3 days we were in Texas. I wrote that joke on the plane, And then I talked to Darren about it. He said, let's do it tonight. Let's try that joke tonight. Just try it in your, try it in the show. You know, your other jokes work. So just try it there. So I did it. It got a pretty good review. And we talked about it afterwards. He's like, you need to cut this and this. Cause we listened to it. I was like, yeah, this is kind of wonky. This is kind of wonky. So we did that. I did it the next night. And so now it was a little changed and refined. It did better. And then by the third night, it was, it's not a full joke yet. I'm still working it out, but it got a great response after 3 days of trying it and just refining it. So that's what I do, is I always like to listen to my material afterwards and then just keep refining it and making it better and better. Okay. Oh, that would be a great tag. Cause you know, sometimes you'll think of like, oh, that's another funny way to say it. Or there's something similar to this that I can say. For your jokes on late night, when you write it, right? I know that there's a process they go through. You guys write a bunch of jokes, then they read them and pick what they like. And then do they ask you to come back and say, I like this setup or I like this, but I don't like this punchline. Can you rewrite this joke? Does that happen to you a lot? How do you figure out that? Because it's a little different because you're not delivering it. Someone else is delivering it. So how do you reconcile that? That's a good question, I think.
I never actually wrote monologue for Jay. I did write it for Caroline Ray. The comedy that I wrote for when I was co-head writer for Jay, I would get jokes from the other writers. The monologue writers would write for the desk pieces and the other pieces too. And most of the time, the jokes would be airable the way they were. And if there was a little change to be made, I would do it, or another one of the what they call the bit writers would do it, the writers who wrote the stuff other than the monologue.
Gotcha.
As I understand Jay's monologue process, though, he would take jokes from his monologue writers on staff, and he was getting jokes from other places too. And every night, it was after midnight, he would work on the monologue with a couple of other writers who would come to his home, and they would work out the wording themselves. And I don't think it ever got to the point where they'd say, where as a group they would say, we really like this joke, it needs a, you know, a little different punchline or a wording change, and then go back to the original writer. I think they would just polish it themselves. Yeah.
What about David Letterman?
The same process. The writers would say the assignment was, okay, we're doing new Olympic souvenirs. It's a prop piece. Everybody turn in new Olympic souvenirs at by 2 o'clock this afternoon. And all the writers would turn in their submissions for new things that they would be selling at the Olympics. And the head writer would pick his or her favorites and pitch them to Dave. And Dave would most of the time agree. He would maybe not agree with, you know, one or two. And then you would take the approved items, the approved jokes and the piece back. And just as the head writer, I would just smooth out the wording here or there, just to kind of correct some stuff and then put it into production. So I think most of the time, anything that went back to a writer would be like something longer, like a sketch or a commercial parody or something like that, where you'd say, the great idea, a commercial parody for this thing. The ending is great. Maybe the ending could use a tagline, like a funny comedy tagline or something. And then the original writer would add that.
That's awesome. I think that's great, because there's levels of comedians, and that sounds like comedians need a network of people to bounce ideas off of. If you're just doing it by yourself, or you're trying to do these things by yourself and you're in a vacuum, you're never going to get better because no one can give you feedback. Right. That seems right. What you're saying.
Right. Many times another writer would come into my office and say, you know, I'm working on this joke. Here's the basic idea, but I just can't quite, it's not quite, you know, do you have a way to make it, put it over the top? And I would think about it and say, well, how about this? And it's, oh yeah, that's great. And then go back and make the change. So I think one thing that many people don't realize about writing for a show, like one of the late night shows, is a lot of it is writing by yourself. There's not a lot of group writing. Some of the pieces you can get together and watch footage, and everybody's pitching jokes about the things they're seeing in the footage. And then if everybody laughs, that's the one that gets written down and finds its way into the show. But for top 10 lists on Dave's show, for the wacky prop pieces, new Olympic souvenirs, a lot of that is just a writer in an office with a computer typing out jokes. You can certainly go into another office and say, hey, you want to write this together, and then team up on a piece. But a lot of it depends on you being able to kind of turn out jokes yourself. And it's there's a quote that I heard. It was a quote by a monologue writer on The Tonight Show.
Okay.
And the quote was, and I'll kind of clean it up a little bit. It was like, writing a topical monologue every night is like taking a dump when you don't have to. It's like, yeah, you just, there's going to be a 30 joke monologue on that night, and it's going to have some jokes in it, and you may not feel like writing jokes today, but you've got to take that comedy dump and get some stuff on the page, because that's what you're being paid for.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, there are a lot of comedians who are like, I would love to do that. Well, if you're not writing those topical jokes enough, like I work for a podcast that I write topical jokes every single week. I end up writing 20, 30 jokes every week just for, you know, a 10 minute podcast. It's not that long, you know, there's some piece in there. And then usually I have to write a longer piece at some point that we have at the end of the show. And then usually another commercial that we write in there, a fake ad commercial. And then there's other writers that write other pieces and stuff, but that's what I have to do every week on top of all my other projects that I'm working on and stand up and whatever. So if you can't commit that time, you're not going to get better. And I'm going to tell you guys right away, all my jokes that I write for that are not the best jokes in the world. I work hard on them. I do my best, but I'm under a time constraint. I have to take the news headlines that I find, make those jokes, weed out what are good and bad, and then put them in there and, you know, have it ready. I couldn't imagine doing it every day. I mean, I guess if that's your 100% of your job, but that's not 100% of my job. But I have to do that, you know, every 6 days. I'm getting that all together into a script to be recorded. You know, it's wild.
And a lot of times, even if you think, oh, I could do better than this joke, or this joke isn't the best one I've ever written, you never know what the host is going to go for.
Yeah,
happens a lot on a late night show that the writers will see what jokes are performed on the show, and somebody will say, oh, he went for that one? Oh, no, I thought this other one was much funnier. And so, yeah, if there's a doubt and you think it's pitchable, if you think it's not absolutely terrible, then put it down, because you never know. Or it could lead to another joke that's related, but you know, not exactly the same.
That's the thing, is we put up all of our jokes in our little group or whatever, and then, you know, go through them and say, I like this, but what if you wrote the punchline this way? And it's like, okay, great. And then that makes it better. And then, you know, everybody goes over the jokes and looks at them and gives, oh, great, we like that. Oh, that's good. That should stay. Oh, cut this one. You have a joke that's similar to that here or whatever, somebody, you know, whatever it is. And then we put those 20 or 30 jokes together and, you know, and plus a big, not really a monologue. I don't know what you even call it. It's like, it's kind of like a desk piece, but it's more like a rant kind of thing. And then a ad, a fake ad. And we do make fun of all kinds of stuff. Like, we just did one for, we made fun of Uvalde, the Uvalde Police Department, which I thought was probably my most savage writing, because I was mad about that whole situation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know a way to do it. So I wrote this ad about, you know, hey, do you want to be an awesome dude with all these guns and toys, but not ever have to do anything or save kids' lives? You should come down and join the Uvalde Police Department. Now, it's pretty dark and mean, but I liked that I could get my anger toward that situation out in that way that was comedic and whatever. And I know it was probably a pretty big dig at them, but I don't know. I liked it, firstly.
Yeah, and as long as you think most of your target audience is going to agree with you and agree with what the fake ad is saying, then that's good.
That's super funny. I like writing ads, I think, more than I like writing monologues, because they're kind of like sketches, but they're also parodying something that we all know, that we've all seen, and that you can make fun of. Now, if you could, is there any part of writing, comedy writing, that you haven't got to do? Like, you never wrote a feature, right? Have you written a feature film ever?
I've never been paid to write a feature, no. I've written spec features. but was never able to sell anything.
I'm so surprised. You're super smart. You have all this knowledge and humor. I would be surprised. Somebody needs to get Mr. Toplin to make a feature. Like, I want to see that movie that comes from his brain. I think it would be hilarious and amazing.
I did write a horror spec feature, which had the comedic elements. Let's see. It's the latest title, the working title is Hominid, the True Story of the Oregon Bigfoot Massacre. Okay. So if you're looking for a new take on Bigfoot as a homicidal killer of troubled teens in the Oregon wilderness, I'm your guy.
That sounds awesome, actually. That sounds like something I would totally watch. Like, first of all, Bigfoot's awesome no matter what. Now you add murder mystery into it. That's in comedy.
Yeah, Bigfoot. It has a backstory for Bigfoot that actually has some connection to evolutionary theory and stuff. So it's a realistic Bigfoot execution. So now, never able to sell it.
Now, you wrote for TV. Do you think comedy writers or people who want to break in should be writing spec episodes of stuff? Like, I think I mentioned that I was working on a Simpsons spec. Do you think that that's still a good way for people to get noticed, or should they be writing original stuff to pitch to people?
The latest guidance that I've heard, it might have changed, you can research it online, is people who are looking to hire for half hour shows and for 1 hour shows, they seem to like the original pilot kind of episode, okay, as opposed to an episode of an existing series that is in the genre that you'd like to write for.
Gotcha.
You can probably do some research online and find out if other people agree with me, but I think that's what you should start doing, is the original pilot. And then do an episode of a show that you really like, that you think you could do a good job on, that's already on the air. When I wrote specs, the idea of writing an original pilot just wasn't even on anybody's radar. I wrote a spec Cheers. I wrote a spec Married with Children.
Yeah.
Because people who are hiring understood that it's really hard to write an original pilot, because you not only have to write, if we're talking about half hour, you not only have to know how to write a funny sitcom that has a story that works and it reflects the characters as they exist and is funny. You also have to know how to create the template for a series, which is a whole other level of difficulty. but that's apparently what they're asking for. I could be wrong. So I think, given that, obviously it's best to do both. You know, you can have your original pilot and then your episode of The Simpsons. But you could start by doing an episode of an existing series and just view that as a supplement to your education in how to write a sitcom. Buy a book or two about how to write sitcoms, and do everything the books recommend. Study your target sitcom. How many breaks are there? Is there an A story, a B story, a runner? How do they do it? And then do that yourself. And by then that's a way to educate yourself into how to write a half hour show. And then you can say, okay, I've nailed this one. I think it's great. It's a great episode of whatever you're specking. And then say, all right, buy a book or two about how to write a pilot, and then say, all right, given what I know about how to write a sitcom, how do I create an original sitcom of my own, and then write that.
I like that. And then if someone wanted to write late night, I know there's such thing as a late night packet. I've actually never seen a late night packet before. I think maybe Jerry Corley did give out one time, but how do people, writers, go about finding, one, what a late night packet looks like, and two, about where to submit late night packets? That information kind of seems to be under the radar sometimes, where you don't hear about it till afterwards. Like, oh, I was able to submit my packet. And you're like, well, I've never heard of anybody. Like, how? There wasn't anything out there. How does that work?
Yeah, it's not announced. That's a pretty tough assignment, is to figure out who's hiring and where to send your submissions. The easy answer, but it isn't necessary, is get an agent, have a manager, and they will know that stuff. Or you can get to know somebody who has an agent or manager who is a good enough friend that that person will say, oh, my agent says that Jimmy Fallon is reading writers. Send it to, you know, the production company. So the answer to that, I think, comes down to networking and just trading information and supporting each other. And if you hear something, just pass it along. As far as the first part, which is what does a packet look like, there's an appendix in my book that has a sample packet that is, right. It's a little overstuffed just because I wanted to put a lot of different kinds of pieces in it. But if you write a packet in that format, you'll get pretty close to what a professionally written packet looks like, that looks like the kind of packet that head writers and producers on the late night show will be used to seeing. And you can also online, some people might have posted their packets online. And I don't know if NBC is still doing it, but NBC has this late night writers workshop that they do.
I had a friend of mine that did it, and then he wrote for Late Night with Lily Singh, I think is what it was. So he wrote one of those things for a while, yeah.
Oh, good. And they have some guidelines they list if you're submitting to the writer's workshop. It's very competitive. I think they got 1,000 submissions a couple of years in a row to be asked to join the program. But they'll have a guidance, like I think it's 1 or 2 pages of monologue jokes, a desk piece idea, maybe a sketch. So you can kind of use that as another data point if you're trying to figure out what to put in a packet.
Now, do you do any consulting or any coaching or anything like that? Is that something that you would be interested in doing or want to do? Like if comedians wanted to work with you to get better at writing stuff after they've read your book, obviously, and done those things, do you do any of that stuff? I'm just out of curiosity.
I don't anymore. I used to teach at the People's Improv Theater, which led to the book. Okay. I taught it. I had the course outline. And then I thought, well, maybe other people would like to get this information who don't live in New York, don't want to pay for the class. And so I put that in a book. And after that, I haven't really done any coaching. I've been concentrating on my new artificial intelligence project, which I don't know if you've heard about. I've taken the what I call the algorithms in the book, the rules, the recipes for joke writing, and I'm getting artificial intelligence language models to write jokes now.
That's awesome.
So I've translated the rules into computer code and use the latest techniques in AI to try to make a chatbot funnier, to teach chatbots how to crack jokes, how to improvise jokes. And you can actually see samples of the output of the program. I call it Witscript. On Twitter, at Witscript. I've been posting a Witscript joke every day. It's cherry picked, so these are the among the best Witscript jokes. But that's my focus now, is to teach HAL 9000 how to have a sense of humor, to teach Skynet how to crack jokes.
they're gonna kill us using wit. That's how we all die.
Or we tell them a joke and they'll say, "Oh, I was gonna fire nuclear missiles, but I'm laughing too hard. I can't kill humanity now. I'm laughing." So yeah. So the idea would be if you can get a robot to have a sense of humor, it can be an artificial companion. And there's a lot of loneliness in the world. People might turn to an artificial buddy. Who can sit with them and watch TV and trade jokes with them and become a little less lonely. So that's my latest. I'm focusing on that. That's kind of thank you. I don't really have as much time as I would like to coach or any time or read material or anything.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I appreciate your time that you did take out of your day to be here. I want to thank you again for helping me become a better comedy writer, for your book, for everything that you've done. I 100% appreciate it. Where can people find you? Where can they find your book? Where can they find more about the chatbot, all that stuff? You can plug all your stuff that you want to plug.
Oh, thank you. Amazon has the book. It's Comedy Writing for Late Night TV by Joe Toplin. Just buy it on Amazon. On Twitter, I'm at Joe Toplin is my Twitter handle, where I post my jokes. And then my computer student, Witscript, posts jokes at Witscript on Twitter.
So and I'll put all that in the show notes too.
Yeah, it just made a Dolly Parton brassiere joke, which was kind of funny. So you can look for that one.
Now, are you going to do a Kindle version or a digital version of the book at some point? I like reading stuff on my Kindle or on my thing instead of having a physical book, but I'm just curious.
I have no plans. It's just a physical book.
Okay.
For various reasons. I'm a little bit concerned about piracy.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Unfortunately, just the physical, just the dead trees version.
That's okay. I'm okay with that. I'm going to have to get one signed by you at some point in my life before I, yeah.
I would love to send you a signed copy.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure. We'll talk afterwards.
We'll talk afterwards. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Go check out Joe Choplin. I promise you that if you read this book, you are going to learn a lot. There is so much in it that it will help you with all of your writing, whether you want to write late night or not. Just learning more structure for jokes and how to set up jokes will help you in your own process. So if you're just a stand-up writer, you have no interest in late night, you're still going to learn a lot. If you're an improv or a sketch writer or something like that, you're going to learn a lot from it as well. It has so many things in it that it's going to help you with your comedy. So don't just discount it because you go, well, I don't care about late night TV. Find gold. There is gold in it, a lot of gold, actually, probably more than the cover price, for sure, actually. There's more than the cover price. You could charge double, and you'd still get your money's worth, I promise. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much, Joe. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.